From Dust Tracks on a Road by Zora Neale Hurston. I used to take a seat on top of the gatepost and watch the world go by. One way to Orlando ran past my house, so the carriages and cars would pass before me. The movement made me glad to see it. Often the white travelers would hail me, but more often I hailed them and asked, "Don't you want me to go a piece of the way with you?" They always did. I know now that I must have caused a great deal of amusement among them, but my self-assurance must have carried the point, for I was always invited to come along. I'd ride up the road for perhaps a half mile, then walk back. I did not do this with the permission of my parents, nor with their foreknowledge. When they found out about it later, I usually got a whipping. My grandmother worried about my forward ways a great deal. She had known slavery, and to her, my brazenness was unthinkable. "Get down off of that gatepost, you little sow, you! Get down! Settin' up there looking them white folks right in the face. They's going to lynch you yet. And don't stand in that doorway gazing out at 'em neither. You's too brazen to live long." Nevertheless, I kept right on gazing at them and going a piece of the way whenever I could make it. The village seemed dull to me most of the time. If the village was singing a chorus, I must have missed the tune. Perhaps a year before the old man died, I came to know two other white people for myself. They were women. It came about this way. The whites who came down from the north were often brought by their friends to visit the village school. A Negro school was something strange to them, and while they were always sympathetic and kind, curiosity must have been present also. They came and went. Always the room was hurriedly put in order, and we were threatened with a prompt and bloody death if we cut one caper while the visitors were present. We always sang a spiritual led by Mr. Calhoun himself. Mrs. Calhoun always stood in the back with a palmetto switch in her hand as a squelcher. We were all little angels for the duration because we'd better be. She would cut her eyes and give us a glare that meant trouble, then turn her face towards the visitors and beam as much as to say it was a great privilege and pleasure to teach lovely children like us. They couldn't see that palmetto hickory in her hand behind all those benches, but we knew where our angelic behavior was coming from. Usually, the visitors gave warning a day ahead, and we would be cautioned to put on shoes, comb our heads, and see to ears and fingernails. There was a close inspection of every one of us before we marched in that morning. Knotty heads, dirty ears and fingernails got hauled out of line, strapped, and sent home to lick the calf over again. This particular afternoon, the two young ladies just popped in. Mr. Calhoun was flustered, but he put on the best show he could. He dismissed the class that he was teaching up at the front of the room, then called the fifth grade in reading. That was my class. So we took our readers and went up front. We stood up in the usual line and opened to the lesson. It was the story of Pluto and Persephone. It was new and hard to the class in general, and Mr. Calhoun was very uncomfortable as the readers stumbled along, spelling out words with their lips and in mumbling undertones before they exposed them experimentally to the teacher's ears. Then it came to me. I was fifth or sixth down the line. The story was not new to me, because I had read my reader through from lid to lid the first week that Papa had bought it for me.